Hello and welcome to the Windows 10 Technical Preview Jumpstart here on Microsoft Virtual Academy. Today we're going to be taking a look at some of the fundamental ideas inside of Windows 10 that you guys need to be understanding so that when we do get to the point of release of Windows 10, you'll have a greater understanding of exactly what you need to do and some of the areas that we've made some of our investments. In order to start us off, I've invited Brad McCabe along to talk to us about Windows 10 as a more overall piece to set the scene for some of the deeper sessions on security, on management, deployment, on the store and on Internet Explorer that we're going to be seeing throughout the course of this jumpstart. So, Brad, starting off, what's the idea with Windows 10?
So when we thought about Windows 10, we went out, we talked to a lot of different customers out there, a lot of folks probably that are, you know, watching, listening to this conversation here, went out, really wanted to hear what they had to say and what they were thinking about. And all of that really came together into four main areas that, you know, all that feedback sort of coalesced around, right? And we'll talk a lot about these through this conversation. But I mean, the first one was about having one single converged platform for Windows, right? Another one was around building that product that people would love to use, right? A lot of the things around user experience and some of the other things that we'll talk about as well as we go through. Mm-hmm. Another area that we heard a lot of feedback and a lot of things from folks out there was around modern security threats and bringing that protection that was needed in this world, right? To bring these modern security threats and how we're going to defend and protect against them. And finally, the last area was about being able to manage for continuous innovation, right? That ability to always stay current, to be able to make sure our users are getting the best possible experience, while at the same time not, you know, overburdening and overtaxing, you know, the folks out there listening and watching who are having to support this, maintain this, roll these systems out to their end users and their customers.
Yeah, I think it's a super cool thing that we have this, that we're building a new operating system that's going to run on tons of different types of devices, and yet we're getting so much feedback from the people who have already started using the technical preview, but we've been gathering that feedback from enterprise groups for quite a long time, bring them into discussions with us, with the product teams, to actually start to pull together some of the requirements that we have from a modern operating system. And as you say, that's exactly where we got to those buckets. Because we've got a live Q&A, don't forget to ask questions on the Q&A, but we're not going to answer any feedback questions around the product because they need to go through through the Windows feedback tool inside of the technical preview, right, and also through user voice. So please don't give us extra feedback on the Q&A. Let's keep it down to questions, and we'll try to answer everything that we can on the questions. So in terms of thinking about one converged Windows, what does that really mean for us, and why is it important for these guys out there? What's going to be the big driver there? Why is it that they've been asking us for it?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because I mean, if you think about it from an IT pro point of view, right, from someone that has to manage and maintain these devices all the time, right, it was really challenging for when I have hundreds of thousands of users or tens of thousands of users or however many users I have, right, and each user has his own machine. But as we keep scaling that up, right, each user has his own machine, then each user had his own machine and a phone, and now each user has his own machine, a phone, and potentially a tablet. And on top of that, now we talk about bringing in things like the Internet of Things and more devices and more sensors into the workplace. So you start to get to this place where you just have this massive amount of technology to manage. And by having one converged Windows and one converged platform that runs from the smallest of things on sensors like IoT all the way up through phones and through tablets and through desktops and laptops, all the way up to large, say, conference room screens and displays, right? How do I manage all of that? Well, having one consistent approach, right? One set of frameworks that I could use, having one security model and one way to think about security across all of those, right? Having one platform that I can have my code run on. So with Universal Apps, if I want to have my code run on my phone, have it run on my tablet, have it run up on my laptop, I can write one application to stretch across to all of that. And with a lot of the work that we do, right, as developers, you can take and you can have the user experience adjust so that with that universal app, I get a great experience on my phone, but then I get an experience scaled that makes sense on a large screen maybe that I've got in front of me or on my laptop screen. And if I'm running it on a large conference room TV, for example, or conference room monitor, I get a user experience there as well that makes sense and is great for me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think as an IT pro, whenever I had to go and deploy an application, I'd have to find a different application for each different platform. And that kind of, from a development and an application point of view, it kind of lifts us out of that particular technological rut, so to speak. We have that same code running across everything and it just adapts. And if you wanted to see a really good example of that today with, say, Windows 8.1, you look at the MSN apps, universal apps delivered once that run on different form factors completely seamlessly. If you could do that with your line of business applications, that's going to lead to a place where actually it's a lot easier from an IT guy's point of view to actually manage the application estate.
Right. And the really cool thing about universal apps as well is that, right, even if you never touch a phone, even if you only ever run that universal app on a monitor, right, say maybe you got a 30-inch monitor on your desktop or multiple monitors on your desktop, you still get the advantages of this because what happens is with that UI scaling to make sense, right, you think about a lot of older applications, and when you shrink down the UI, what you end up getting is just the same thing in a little window with scroll bars on the sides and the tops. Yeah. Well, with universal apps, as I start to shrink that down, because maybe I want to dock it off in the upper right corner or to the left side of my screen, let's say, that UI gets intelligent. And so it shows you the data you care about, the information you care about, in a format and style that you care about in that screen real estate. So even if I never took it to a phone, even if I never took it to a tablet, there's all these great benefits from universal apps right on your existing laptops and desktops.
And one of the first things that folks would have realized from the technical previews is that running on a desktop, you actually get the app completely windowed now on the device. So when you go and launch one of those universal apps, it can interact in a very familiar way with an existing application, which is, say, a desktop application that just runs on the same desktop. So they start to become more consistent. But you're right, when I have those moving between, say, my Surface Pro 3 screen and my two connected 1080p screens, I need something that scales a little better in that scenario. And that's where universal apps really help. I think the management aspect is also super important for these guys.
Right.
You mentioned there that the same management framework across everything from IoT devices right through to the largest of desktop machines. That's also really important because that helps us to bring not only a level of familiarity to IT guys out there who are going to be doing the management, but it also helps us to bring down the cost of managing all of the devices inside of an enterprise.
Exactly. And we'll talk more about management with some of your other guests deeper. We'll talk a little bit more as we go on. But, you know, talking about those universal apps, you know, and you had brought up them running inside of Windows in the technical preview, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of good things there in that technical preview that really helps make it about a product that people will love to use, right? So if I think about that, right, really, there's a couple of areas there that I think about that is what will make it that product that people love, right? There's that user experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the work that we're doing there, right, we're doing a lot of work to make sure, and you see this in the technical preview today, to make sure that it's very familiar and it's very, very easy for Windows 7 users to use. Mm-hmm. Right? One of the things that we saw with Windows 8, it's a very interesting product when you look at it from what customers tell us and what we hear from them. When we look at some of the customer satisfaction information, and we look at Windows 10 on touch devices, right, tablets and two-in-ones and those types of form factors, we see very, very strong customer satisfaction numbers, right? Users really like Windows 8 and 8.1 on those touch devices. But one of the places that we see some challenges are those mouse and keyboard experiences, which, you know, while there's a lot more of these touch experiences and tablets coming into the enterprise and two-in-ones coming into the enterprise, there's still a lot of non-touch out there. There's still a lot of the mouse and keyboard experience in there. So we wanted to make sure that, especially when it's working in a desktop type of environment, right? I've got a machine, a mouse and keyboard, two, three, four screens in front of me, maybe on a clamshell style laptop, that it worked and functioned in a great way for those Windows 7 users, right? Windows show up in, or apps show up in Windows. If I click on the start button, I get a very familiar start menu, right? That works very, very well for me. Still brings in some great things like live tiles, still has some other enhancements in that start menu. But it's a great experience.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we're getting some really good anecdotal feedback on, certainly, is that actually it's very familiar for a Windows 7 user. They actually can find their way around the system without having to relearn too much, which is a major one of the investment pillars for us. It's making it familiar, making it so that people don't have too much of a learning curve in order to move from, say, 7 to Windows 10, because we expect a few people to make that kind of a jump.
Right. And, you know, as we'll talk about, we do a lot of work to make sure that we do things like in-place upgrades so that folks can take their machine right from Windows 7 SP1 and go right to 10. All of their apps, all of their data, all of their settings, all right there on that machine. Right, but as part of doing that, if you know, I liken it kind of to a car, right? So you bring your car home, you park it in the garage, and you go up to bed. You come down the next morning, right? When you left your car, you had your favorite stereo stations programmed in, right? The seat was all adjusted exactly how you like it in the car, and you know you had your fluffy little, maybe smelly dice hanging in the window, and you went up to bed.
Yeah.
And you come down the next morning, and you find there's leather seats in the car, and you find that the car stereo has been upgraded, and there's a new stereo in there, right? And you find these other enhancements around the car. It's got that nice new car smell, right? But your seat is exactly where you left it. It's completely comfortable for you. The radio is tuned to all of your favorite stations. Even those fluffy old dice are now still hanging on that mirror there for you, right? And that's a lot like what we want the experience to be from Windows 7 to Windows 10, right? We want you to have everything exactly how you put it, everything exactly how you like it, but still have all these great new things, right? But it's still your car, still drives the way you expect it, it still feels very familiar, yet it also feels very new and very modern to you.
And there's some really cool things that we've added into, certainly some of the previews that are out at the time of this jumpstart going live. We've got things like the ability to, something that I really love, the ability to snap windows. But if you're on two monitors and they're sat like this, you can snap by moving to the center of those two monitors, and then it just goes to the correct half of the screen. Well, you kind of expected that, but previously we hadn't been able to enable that kind of nice part of the user interface. So it's cool that we've got those kind of things coming through as well.
Exactly. We've done a lot of things like that to make sure that we've taken that experience from Windows 7 and we've continued to enhance it. We've continued to move it forward. We've continued to take everything you love, like Snap, for example, and rather than giving you Snap to two sides, now you can do quadrants. Now you can do them at, they don't have to be 50-50. They can be, 30-70 or whatever size makes sense for you, right? We've done things like making sure that if you have multiple monitors that you can snap across that shared edge between the monitors, right? Lots of great familiar things that have just gotten better. But we've also worked to make sure that's scaled across the devices as well, right? We've shown some different videos and things that you can go out and see on the web and other places of how, for example, this experience works in a two-in-one environment. How we can take that start menu and, you know, if you pull the keyboard off or, you know, rotate the screen down, depending on what your two-in-one type looks like, right? You'd see that start menu kind of just scroll and scale right up across those devices. So it's still your start menu. It's just now in a very, very touch-optimized space. And then you put that keyboard back or do whatever, you know, you do on that machine to go back into that mouse and keyboard type of state, and you see it come down. You see the apps go full screen, or you see the apps go windowed. And we do it in a very fluid way for the user, so it feels very natural. But the device just works the way they think it should work with the input mechanisms that they're trying to use. And I think you'll see a lot of great new hardware, a lot of great innovative form factors as well. You know, there's a lot of great things out there today. And, you know, if folks are looking for touch-based devices, they should definitely continue to look at Windows 8.1 devices. They're great pieces of hardware today. Mm-hmm. But they'll also be, just like there always is in technology, great new hardware as well, kind of coming through that pipeline.
Yeah, and it's we're doing this jumpstart just before the holiday season, and we're starting to see some of the Windows 8.1 holiday tablets actually hit the market. And some of those are kind of incredible little 7-inch, 8-inch devices, and the price factor has come really down on those. They're very compelling, purely based off of the price for the operating system, the device, and everything you're getting.
Oh, there's some great price points coming this holiday. There's, you know, some very, very innovative designs out there. I mean, you know, maybe I should be careful. I think I'm safe that my wife isn't watching. Hopefully none of her friends are watching, but her old laptop is starting to hit the end of that life that it has in it. So, you know, I will definitely be in the market myself this holiday season looking at a lot of this hardware, you know, going out and buying with confidence as well, you know, knowing that she'll have a great experience on it now. You know, I'll definitely get something touch, you know, probably some type of 2-in-1 for personal reasons, the way she uses it. Mm-hmm. But definitely get that hardware, you know, and I know that she'll have a good experience down the road as well with it.
And this drive of price points down is actually incredibly important for enterprise, because it changes that dynamic a little bit. Whereas you used to have to buy a device, maybe invest in it for 3 years for a hardware refresh, that opens up the possibility that maybe you have more disposable devices inside of an enterprise, whereby you have a scenario where somebody does go into a store, does pick up a $100 device that's running Windows, and in the future we can actually start to bring that into an enterprise life cycle of management that you'd expect to be able to do. And yet it's a $100 device. If they happen to lose it, you'll have remote wipe capability, and it gives you the ability to remotely wipe should you need to. Just changes the dynamic, really, of why people would be looking at that type of device.
Yeah, and I think another thing that'll change that dynamic as well is, like, one of the things that we look at that, you know, we're still early, so we'll have to give it a better name as we get closer to launch. But, you know, what internally we call, like, dynamic provisioning right now. Mm-hmm. This ability to take a device, go out and buy that device. You know, maybe it comes with one particular version of Windows, right? It's got a bunch of things on it. Have the user sign in with their Azure Active Directory credentials so that they're signing in, they're coming in with your credentials, right? And then they come in and then they automatically get enrolled in MDM, right? They automatically get apps pushed down to them. Maybe, you know, the version of Windows there becomes the correct version or the correct edition that they're looking for, right? All these things, they get their user settings, they get their background. So they had this brand new machine, they signed in, and then at the end of that first sign-in, well, it's a, quote, corporate machine. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's, you know, one of those machines that I ordered and it showed up and it went to IT and IT did a bunch of stuff and then it showed up at my desk like 3 weeks later after it had supposedly arrived at the company, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, there's, in so many of the companies, there's a handful of guys and there's all these machines coming in and they're just sitting there imaging them, putting base images and sending it out.
Yeah.
Like, you'll still be able to do that with Windows 10, right? If that's a system that works and you want to continue to do, you can still continue to do that. But at the same time, we think that, you know, we can change the way this provisioning happens, right? And you take that with some of these other trends in the industry, you know, kind of like the price points and some of the new form factors that we were talking about. And I think it'll start to change the way that people take and load these machines. I think that while you can still wipe and reload, I think for most people and most organizations, it's really going to bring about an end to wipe and reload.
Yeah, I think it's there's certainly some really good ways that we can actually start to adjust that, again, adjust that dynamic that people are actually faced with. You might not want to have to go through the process of finding the drivers for every single device that's on the market. So we can actually help you with that. One of the other things that's driving and has been driven by you guys, some of this conversation, is around the fact that security threats have actually evolved recently. And we're now facing a much more, I guess, uncertain future around security at the moment. And we need some additional protections putting in place.
Yeah, the world of security has fundamentally changed in the last two-ish years, right? It used to be the scariest thing you had to worry about was some college kid, you know, or some other kid he couldn't get a date on Friday night. He was sitting in his dorm room. And so the fun was trying to attack your network, or, you know, it was trying to get some fame and glory by being the guy that, you know, pierced, you know, whatever Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. We've seen that shift now, though. I mean, you look at the world today, and it really feels like you can insert any company name almost. You just think about the papers and the articles, and every week it feels like there's just a new name, there's just a new breach, there's a new issue out there. And you really look at the dynamics behind that, and there are two big things that have shifted in that space, right? The first is that cybercrime has gone from this petty little theft, if you will, into big intellectual property theft and big money, right? So you have things like organized crime where, you know, it used to be against some of these old criminals, you just built enough defenses to sort of keep people at bay.
Yeah.
Right. I use another car analogy. I like car analogies, right? And when I was younger, people used to always steal car stereos. I've gotten older. I don't have a good car stereo now. I don't know if that's still an issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was a kid, people always were just ripping off car stereos left and right.
Yeah.
And so what I did, what a lot of people did, was I went out and got a little alarm. Mm-hmm. Right. Some people went the low budget way as well, and they got the little red blinky light.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the alarm. It was all about when that criminal walked down, he looked and said, oh, you got a blinky light. I'm going to go to the next guy and I'm going to steal his radio.
Mm-hmm. No blinky light.
And you could do something very similar, right? You put enough rings around your network and you had that blinky light, right? You had that hey, get away from me, go get the other guy. Mm-hmm. The problem is now that the bad guys really want your information, right? They've decided that they want something that you have. And so what they've done is they've said, with things like organized crime, things like the involvement that we see of nation states around the world, they have really deep pockets. And what they've done is they said, I don't care that you got that little blinky light. I'm going to get an electrical engineer to figure out how to get through that blinky light. And I'm going to get the world's best locksmith to go through your lock. And I don't care. I want your car stereo in particular.
Yeah, it's become much more of a targeted and specific attack.
Exactly. And that's a thing that people really have to take to heart and they really have to think about, because it changes the way we have to think, right? We have to assume a breach and we have to think about protecting rings from the inside out. And we have to think about where are some of these weaker links, right? And so one of those things is we need to make sure that the person sitting behind the keyboard typing away is actually who they say they are. Mm-hmm. Right. There was an article out not too long ago, beginning of August, about a crime syndicate. And this organization stole 1.2 billion usernames and passwords off of over 400,000 internet sites. Now, I know no one watching here would ever do this, but rest assured that I think some of your users have, which is they've used the same username and password across multiple sites and potentially the same username and password combination that they use at work.
Yeah.
Right? So now the bad guys just have this Rolodex of names and of usernames and passwords. Mm-hmm. And so we need to kind of move beyond that place, and we need to work into a place where we have sort of that next generation of user credentials, where we can do two-factor authentication to make sure that the guy behind the keyboard is who he says he is. At the same time, we don't burden IT and we don't bring extra cost to the business. Mm-hmm. And I know Chris will go much deeper into how we do this as well. But after we know who the guy is behind the keyboard and we know he's who he says he is, then we also have to think about the data.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And we've got great products, things like BitLocker, that do an awesome job of protecting the data on my device, protecting that data when it's resting on the device. But you think about the modern world, and data rarely rest, let alone rest on just a device. It's on a device, it's on a USB, it's out in the cloud, it's bouncing around in email, it's moving all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so with this thing that we're working with internally that we call enterprise data protection, once again, we'll have to have a better name.
Yeah, although we do like it. It has got an acronym.
Exactly. You know, at Microsoft, we love our acronyms, mm-hmm. but I'm sure we'll do something better. Mm-hmm. But with this ability to protect this enterprise data, what we need to do is we need to take that BitLocker-like encryption, that BitLocker strength and security, and take it from the hard drive and then wrap and protect the file so that file is self-protecting no matter where that file goes in the world. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we have to protect things like the device, right? We know the person, we know the data safe, we've got to do things to keep the device and the remote connections and everything around them secure as well.
Yeah, and that takes you into that world of having to make sure that things are running with VPNs and those kind of things on a per-app basis to make sure that each individual app has that correct level of connection back into the enterprise as well.
Right, so it could be always-on VPN connections, could be per-app VPN connections, but that ability to, as you say, make sure that we have the right connection from the app back to its data, no matter where, you know, you think of these modern users, and sometimes some of these users, the closest they see to the corporate network is a Starbucks.
Yeah.
Right, so how do we make sure that all of that data is always kept safe and secure?
And I guess lastly, we want to talk about managing, one of the things that you describe is managing for continuous, you're going to have to say this.
Managing for continuous innovation.
That's it, exactly, yeah. It's which I think is, people are starting to see that we're having this ability to update the builds that they're using inside a preview, but it means a lot more to us than just that.
Right, and I mean, on a very, you know, low level, if you will, people in the Windows Insider program have seen, you know, that we shipped the initial technology preview. We've since shipped two updates to that technology preview, right? So we're taking and we are iterating on that feedback. We're pushing that feedback out, and we'll continue to help users to get current as well as to stay current, to bring that agility that the business needs. Right. At the same time, we have to think about, you know, how do we keep this running? So how do we make sure that we've got good choices and the right choices in management, mm-hmm. right? Whether that management is MDM or that management is existing infrastructure like System Center that folks have, right? We need to make sure that we do things like we were talking about earlier, like ending wipe and reload and moving out from there into things like dynamic provisioning, in-place upgrades. And we also need to make sure that we do some work around the App Store to make sure that App Store is truly open for business, mm-hmm. and truly ready to go.
Yeah, because that's one of the areas where I think we've had a fair amount of feedback over time, which is that we need to make it easier for companies to get hold of applications out of the store. So things like volume purchasing, being able to use your own store inside the store, are pretty great areas. And I think Michael's going to go into some pretty great depth around those a little bit later on. So that should be kind of cool. I guess that brings us towards roughly the end of this section. So we've kind of gone through the one converged Windows platform. You can be able to run Windows across a multitude of devices, use the same apps, the same management methodologies and frameworks across those devices. We've also talked about some of the ways that Windows is changing around the product itself to make it so that it's a more lovable product, in fact, so that you can actually get more features out of it that you want to use on a daily basis. We also then went on and explained a little bit about security threats and how those are changing, and also around the continuous innovation around management and deployment and basically just looking after the systems that you've got out there. We're going to be diving more into every single one of those across the course of the next couple of hours. So please keep watching the MVA course, keep watching this Jumpstart. Obviously, we've got the Q&A. Also, ask questions. We'll answer as much as we can inside of the questions. There's obviously some areas we are talking about a product which is currently being built. There's some areas where we're not ready to reveal information yet. So there will be some questions that we just cannot answer. And also, if there's feedback about the product, please let's keep those into the normal feedback channels, like the app inside of the technical preview, and like the user voice forum, because that really does make sure that our engineers get to see all of the information that they really truly need and get to see all of your feedback.
And I would actually build on that, and I'd say kind of continuing out, not just, you know, keeping the feedback there here, but also signing up, joining that Windows Insider program, looking at those new builds as they come out, and providing us that continuous feedback and having that continuous dialogue back and forth.
Yeah, we've got a couple of thousand people on the stream at the moment, so if you can please start joining the Insider program, make sure you're running the technical preview so that you do get to experience this. Start testing your apps on the build so that we can start to pull some of that telemetry in and know some of the common application compatibility issues. It is helping us to build Windows as we go forward. We'll take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back with our next section.